Okay, I understand why the Sedras of Shmos, Va'era, Bo, Bishalach are in Sefer HaGeula. They all deal with Geula. I even understand why the Sedra of Yisro is there, because Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Misha Osek BaTorah, and real freedom only comes when you have the Torah to guide you, and that's why the holiday of Pesach and the holiday of Shavuos are connected with Sfiras HaOmer. One of the reasons, because those two holidays go together. You can't have physical freedom without spiritual freedom making it significant. But what in the world are the Sedras of Mishpatim, Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Vayakel, Pekudei doing in the Book of Geula? The Sedra of Mishpatim had to do mostly with civil laws, laws between man and man, and that could have been very well in Vayikra, like Sefer Kedoshim, very similar laws, or somewhere in Devarim. Why is it dafka in the Book of Geula? And all the Sedras we're reading now, Truma, Tetzaveh, which deal with the building of the Mishkan, should have been in Vayikra. Vayikra is Toras Kohanim. It has to do with the Korbanos, it has to do with Tahara of the Kohanim. In order for there to be Korbanos, there has to be a Mishkan. So the first Sedras in Vayikra should have been the building of the Mishkan. Why is the building of the Mishkan in Sefer Shmos, which is Sefer HaGeula? So first let me tell you what the Ramban says about the building of the Mishkan and Sefer Shmos, and then we'll understand why Mishpatim is also there. The Ramban says the following, that the real Geula wasn't completed until Klal Yisrael returned to the original glory of the Avos and Imahos, where God's presence rested on their tents. The Ribono Shel Olam had a tremendous bond with the Avos and Imahos on a constant basis. And therefore, until we went back to that mila, until we went back to that tremendous matzav, we weren't really redeemed. And therefore, until the Mishkan was built and the Ribono Shel Olam Shechina rested amongst Klal Yisrael, we didn't go back to our original glory, and the Geula wasn't completed. So I understand now why the building of the Mishkan had to be in Sefer HaGeula, because the Geula wasn't completed until the Ribono Shel Olam rested his presence amongst Bnei Yisrael. But it doesn't still answer why Mishpatim is in Sefer HaGeula. So I have to understand a little bit what Mishpatim are and what they represent. It says that Magid Dvarov LeYaakov, Chukov UMishpatov LeYisrael. The Ribono Shel Olam tells specifically to Yaakov and Yisrael his Chukim and Mishpatim. What are Chukim? How do you normally understand what Chukim are?
Laws.
What?
Laws.
Laws of what? What kind of laws?
Country.
What? Right. Laws that are beyond rationale. They're not irrational, they're super rational. They're beyond rationale. And Mishpatim are what? Laws that have a rationale, like don't murder, don't steal, they make sense. There's a logic to them. Okay? That's usually how we understand it. Then the pasuk ends, Lo asa chen l'chol goy, the Ribono Shel Olam didn't do this, make known his chukim and mishpatim to every nation, Umishpatim bal yidom haleluka, and he didn't let known his mishpatim to the nations of the world. Now, on the surface, it should be just the opposite. Mishpatim goyim know also. Mishpatim are rational, logical laws. Don't steal, don't murder, and so on. Goyim have those laws. Which laws don't goyim have? Kashrus. That's a chok. Right? Poraduma. That's a chok. Things that are beyond rationale, that the Goyim don't have. But the Goyim have Mishpatim. Why does it say Mishpatim bal yidom? That the Goyim don't know Mishpatim. God didn't give them to know Mishpatim. He gave them to know Mishpatim just as much as us. The answer is that our Torah, there's no difference between laws between man and man and laws between man and God. There's no religious laws. There's laws you have to keep as religion. And then there's things that have to do with regular life. It's all the same. All mishpatim are chukim. The black and white areas may make sense, may be rational. But the gray areas are not based on rationale. I'll give you an example. I would never want to argue purely from a rational standpoint against somebody who advocates abortion being legal. Because rationally, I could hear a very good argument why a baby who's not born is the property of the mother, and the mother has the right to terminate that pregnancy. I could hear rationally, right, why is it usher? Because the Torah said it's usher. I could for sure hear a rational argument for euthanasia. Euthanasia means doesn't mean young people in Asia. It means mercy killing, right? Mercy killing, you have somebody who's an old person, they can't hear, they can't see, they have no teeth, and they're dying of a painful disease, and they ask you to put them out of their misery. Just to give them an overdose of narcotics or painkillers to kill them. I could hear rationally that, you know, why not? But the Torah says it's murder under most circumstances. So is murder always rational? No. Going and shooting somebody in the middle of the street for no reason, yeah, I understand. You can't do that. But these cases, the gray areas, are not necessarily rational. And not only that, but every mishpat has in it also things that are, so every mishpat has in it things that are super rational, and every chok has reasons to it too. There are ideas behind Paraduma, even the difficult parts of Paraduma. There are ideas about kashrus. There are rational ideas about every mitzvah. So then what's the difference between a chok and a mishpat, if it's all the same? The difference is only that predominantly, chukim, the majority of them are beyond rationale, even though there is some rationale to it too. And mishpatim, the majority is rational, even though there are areas that are beyond rationale. But it boils down to the fact that there's no two tumim, two areas of life, right? Two boundaries of life. One is your regular life, and then there's your religious life. But it's all mixed together. I'll give you two examples of how every, what seems to be a religious law, has implications for your everyday interpersonal relationships between people, and how what it seems to be just a regular civil law between people has ramifications of religious between man and God. I'll give you both examples. First example, the halacha of kashrus, of a treifa. We call everything that's not kosher treif, but that's a misnomer. There is a specific kind of thing that's not kosher that's called treif. Treifa really means the following. An animal, let's say a sheep, that was mauled by a wild animal. A lion came and mauled the sheep. Didn't kill it, but it dug its claws into its head or into its chest, put a hole in its lung, put a hole in its brain. The animal's still living. If you shech that animal and you find that it has a hole in the lung, or has a hole in the brain, or one of 18 things that are called a treifa. Basically, they're things that the animal will eventually die from, but right now it's living. But specific things, then the animal is called a treifa. And the Torah says, "Ubosar basod that treifa lo sochelu." If you have an animal that is mauled by a wild animal, and after you shecht it, you find that it has one of these 18 things wrong with some of the organs, and it doesn't have to be mauled by a wild animal. If you have, for whatever reason, you shecht an animal, you have to check the lungs. is you find that there's holes in the lungs, the animal's treifa. The whole animal, not just the lungs. Can't eat any of the animal. That's called the treifa. So the Torah says what to do with the treifa. La kelev tachlichanoso. Should throw it to the dogs. So you know the Medrash, why the dogs get the treifas, because they didn't bark when we left Mitzrayim by Makas Bechoros. Lo yechratz kelev v'sholna. But the Das Sekenim Ibali Atosa says, what's the simple meaning? Why do you throw the treifa to the dogs? Says the Balei Atosfos, because usually sheep herds had dogs, sheep dogs, that watched the herd. And this dog watched the herd faithfully many, many times. And now you have an animal in that herd that you can't eat. So therefore, give it to the dog as Hakor Satov. Show your gratitude to the dog for guarding the flock. Says the Das Sekenim, there's only one problem with that. You know why you have an animal that you can't eat from that flock? Because the dog didn't do his job. Because if the dog would have done his job, he would have got scared away the lion. So the lion got through, or the wolf got through, and mauled this animal. So you're rewarding the dog for not doing his job? Says the Das Sekenim, okay, this time he didn't do his job. But that doesn't erase all the times that he did do his job, all the times that he did faithfully guard the flock. So show him your Akoras HaTov for the times that he did do his job, even though this time the reason you have an animal you can't eat is because of him. But don't let that erase all the good things that he did. Now think for a second. Okay, how many times do we have friends that do us very, very fine things, nice things, good friends with them, and then they do one not nice thing to us? What? How do people normally react to such a person? They erase them from their book. Right, that's it. All the things that they ever did nice are erased, and now they're your enemy because of one thing they did. You don't treat a dog like that. So that's how you treat a human being. So even though this parsha is a parsha of religious law, kosher, kashrus, bein adam lamakom, chok, right? But lamaisa, we learn from this lessons that we can learn between man and man, how to treat another human being. If you don't treat a dog like that, you surely don't treat a person like that. So even though it appears on the surface to be something between adam lamakom, but it has ramifications for adam lechaveru. The opposite is also true. You're not allowed to steal. Somebody steals your pocketbook, right, in broad daylight, they run over to you, snatch your purse, and run away. If you catch them, what happens to them? They have to pay back. No, one time. That's all. They just have to give you back the purse and the money, and if they spent it, or they hurt it, or they destroyed it, you have to pay you back what you stole, what they stole. Nothing more. They pay back what they stole. What happens if somebody breaks into your house at night and steals your purse while you're sleeping? Then what happens if you catch them? They have to pay back double. Double. They catch the ganav. That's called a ganav. The other one is called a goslin. A goslin is somebody who steals in broad daylight and he only pays back once. A ganav is somebody who's sneak thief. He pays twice. So one of the reasons the Gemara says why that's the case, because the goslin isn't afraid of anybody. He's not afraid of you. He comes in broad daylight and steals your purse. And he's not afraid of God because he steals. But he doesn't have the capacity to be afraid. He's not afraid of anybody. So he pays back what he stole. But a ganav is afraid of you. Otherwise, he wouldn't sneak into your house. He'd come in broad daylight and take it. So the fact that he snuck into your house means he's afraid of you. But he's not afraid of God. Person who's afraid of people but not afraid of God, that's worse. So he has to pay double. Now what in the world does Yiras Shamayim have to do with stealing? Stealing is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Right? Now we're going to make this guy pay double because he doesn't have so much Yiras Shamayim? Elamai, you see that there's a total connection, mixture, between what we would call religious laws and laws between man and man. And laws between man and man are also religious laws. There's no different tchumim, different areas, right, different regiments in a person's life. It's all one life. It all has to do between you and God, yourself, and man. And nothing is merely religious. Nothing is merely between man and man. It's all one achdus. It's all one thing together. And that, I think, is the meaning of the following Gemara. The Gemara says that Rav Yosef said that on Shavuos, you have to have a real special meat meal. Eat a steak. Because if it wouldn't be for Shavuos, there'd be a lot of Yosefs in the marketplace. Which the simple meaning is, Rav Yosef said, I'm special because I'm a Talmud Chacham. But if we wouldn't have a Torah, I wouldn't be special. Because there'd be no such thing as a Talmud Chacham. So there'd be a lot of Yosefs in the marketplace. I wouldn't be anybody special. Right? There'd be a lot of Yosefs. But now that the Torah was given and I'm a Talmud Chacham, I'm special. So I'm a special Yosef. There's not a lot of me in the marketplace. That's the simple meaning of the Gemara. That does not sound too modest. And Rav Yosef was known for his modesty. So what does it mean? There's a many, many explanations. I'm going to tell you what I think. It means something completely different than what I just told you. Rav Yosef said the following. You have to eat a nice steak meal on Shavuos. Now, Shavuos celebrates the giving of the Torah. The Torah is something spiritual. What does it have to do with eating steak? Eating a nice steak meal. Rav Yosef said the following. If it wouldn't be for the Torah, a person would really be a lot of different people. He'd be one person when he was involved with his business. He'd be another person when he's involved with his family. Another person when he's involved with his friends. Another person when he's involved with God. And each area of his life would be a separate area. But the fact that the Torah was given, the Torah governs every aspect of life. And there's no separate ideas. There's not one you when you're davening, and one you when you're dealing in business with somebody, or when you're talking to somebody. There's no one you when you're in your home, dealing with your parents, or with your children, or with your siblings, or when you're in a base medrash, or you're in a shul learning. It's all the same. There's one Yosef. If it hadn't been for the Torah, there'd be a lot of Yosefs. A lot of different areas that I would be a different person in different situations. But the Torah puts everything into one perspective. And everything a person does, he does because that's what the Torah wants him to do. There's no religious life for a Jew and secular life. It's all religious life. Everything you do, no matter how mundane it may be, can be done in a way that brings you closer to the Rabbanu Shel Olam Father, and the Torah governs all of it. The Torah teaches you not only how to act in shul, but to act in the marketplace, how to act in your family, how to act with your friends, how to act when you're enjoying your leisure. Everything is governed by the Torah. It's all one thing. That's the idea. And therefore, Shavuos is a spiritual day, spiritual Torah. But you have to celebrate it physically by eating a nice meal too, because there's no difference between them. Everything a person does, from the most mundane to the most spiritual, is all one thing. You understand this idea? A very important idea. And therefore, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu could rest his Shechina on our tents, because that's where the Shechina was. It wasn't in the Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't in the Mishkan. The Asu v'Mikdash v'Shachanti b'Solcham. The Rabbanu Shel Olam resides in the heart of every Jew, in every home, every Jewish home. The Mishkan is the place that brings the Shechina into every heart, into every home. And that's like the Avos. The Avos, the Shechina rested on their tents, not on a Mishkan. On their own personal tents. Everything they did in that tent. They ate, they drank, they slept. They conducted their married life, their family life, everything. That's where the Rabbanu Shel Olam's presence was. Because the Rabbanu Shel Olam's presence deals with everything. And that's why the Avos were called Yeshorim. The Nitziv in his Hakdama, to Hemek Dover, to his Sefer and Chumash. says that Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYosher because it speaks about the lives of the Avos and Imahos, and the Avos and Imahos were called Yesharim. Why were they called Yesharim? Straight people. Because he says a person can be religious. He can be a chassid, a tzaddik, a lomei Torah, but he could still be missing something and not be yosher, not be straight. What does straight mean? Being straight, being yosher, means knowing how to deal with other people, even goyim. The Avos hated the wickedness of the Avodah Zarah. Avraham Avinu hated the wickedness of Sodom, but he davened for them. He dealt with them in a straightforward manner. He knew how to take all of his religion and put it into his daily life and treat other people, understanding that he has to act godly, not only to God, but to other people also. That's a yosher. And therefore, Klal Yisrael couldn't reach the level of the Avos until the Ribono Shel Olam put his Shechina over their homes on everything they did, every part of their life. But the Ribono Shel Olam wouldn't put his Shechina on every part of a Jew's life until the Jews subjugated every part of life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Seder Mishpatim. The Sedra of Mishpatim teaches you how to integrate Yiddishkeit, how to integrate Shechina, Kedusha, into every aspect of life. It's not merely when you're in shul, shuckling, or davening that you have to be frum. When you're dealing with other people, when you're dealing with money matters, when you're dealing with your married life, with your social life, everything, even your entertainment, has to have Kedusha in it. That's what Yiddishkeit is. And therefore the Geula wasn't complete until the Ribono Shel Olam was able to rest his presence over every aspect of life. And that couldn't happen until they were Mekayim, the Mishpatim, until they took every aspect of life and understood that it's all one thing. And therefore Mishpatim Bal Yedom, the Mishpatim of Klal Yisrael, are not the same Mishpatim as the Goyim. The Goyim have Mishpatim that are rational laws. Don't murder, don't steal. It's a very completely civil, rational law. But us, even the civil, rational laws have aspects of religious laws in them, spiritual laws in them. The same Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is also a Bein Adam L'Makom. And every Bein Adam L'Makom also has implications on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. There's no different areas, different regimens. It's all one thing. That's what Torah is all about, and that's why the Sefer HaGeula isn't complete until we learn the Mishpatim, and until then, because of that, we were able to have a Mishkan where the Ribono Shel Olam's presence devolved on every part of our lives. Okay. One more thing. The this week's Sedra, Tetzaveh, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is left out. Even though there are other sedras in the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu's name doesn't appear, like all of Sefer Bereishis, but he's not supposed to be there. So there's nothing special about his name missing. In Sefer Devarim, there are sedras where Moshe's name is not mentioned because he's talking. So sometimes he refers to himself as me because he's talking about himself. So therefore, his name isn't mentioned. That also makes sense. But in this week's sedra, it should have said, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, Tetzaves b'nei Yisrael. Why doesn't it use his name? Throughout the entire Sedra, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned at all. It's all Vi'ata, Vi'ata, Vi'ata. No mention of Moshe's name. And here it doesn't make sense. Here, Moshe's name should be mentioned. So, there are various answers. One answer is that the Sedra of Tetzaveh always falls in the week where Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit, Zayin Adar. Okay? Zayin Adar is going to be on Sunday, and that's the week of Parshas Tetzaveh, basically. Week after, right after. It's always right around the Parsha of Tetzaveh. So, to commemorate that, Torah left Moshe Rabbeinu's name out. That's only one problem with that, that we don't read Parshas Tetzaveh around Zayin Adar, because the Torah said we should do that. It's a minig. Because in Eretz Yisrael, the minig was to finish the Torah every 3 years. They didn't read the Sedras like we do, a whole Sedra every week. They read about a third of a Sedra. And they didn't finish the Torah until every 3 years they had Simchas Torah. Not every year. Finished the Torah in 3 years. The minig of Bavel, which all Klal Yisrael has now, is to finish the Torah every year and to split it into 54 Sedras, and that's how we do it. So according to the minig of splitting the Torah into 54 Sedras, it works out that every year the Sedra of Tetzava comes around Zion Adar. So that can't be the reason why the Torah left out the name of Moshe Rabbeinu from Parshas Tetzava. Others say that Moshe Rabbeinu said in Parshas Kisisa, Im ayin mecheni no misifrecha, erase me from your book. If you're going to destroy Klal Yisrael and don't forgive them for the Chet HaEgel, then erase me from your book. And some learn the book means the Torah. I want my name taken out of the Torah. If I can't save Klal Yisrael, then I'm not worth mentioning. So don't mention me in the Torah. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. So even though the Rabban Shalom didn't destroy Klal Yisrael, but whatever a tzaddik says makes an impression. So the Rabban Shalom took his name out of one Sedra, Tetzaveh. And the only question is, why Tetzaveh? So somebody says something very cute. Says like this, where did Moshe Rabbeinu say Mecheni no misifrecha in Parshas Kisisa? So the next week was Vayakel. So Rabban Shalom said, nah, I don't want to leave his name out of Vayakel, let's wait. And Pekudei, and then Sefer Vayikra, and then Bamidbar, and then Devarim, and then Bereishis. When do you come back to the last Sedra before you start again? Kisisa, Tetzaveh. So God kept pushing it off. I'm going to leave his name off next week, next week, next week, until the last time, then he had no choice, so he had to leave his name off in Tetzaveh. But it doesn't seem fair that Moshe Rabbeinu offered to have his name erased from the Torah for the sake of Klal Yisrael, and because of that he should be punished and his name is taken out of the Torah. So let me explain to you what I think the idea is. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu refused to accept the shlichus to redeem the Jewish people, he had all different excuses. And God patiently answered all his excuses until the last one. And that's when God got angry. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Shlach no biad tishlach. Send the one you usually send. Usually in Mitzrayim, when you had something to send to Klal Yisrael, you sent my brother Aaron. He was a Navi. Now comes the big job of redeeming the Jewish people, and Aaron gets passed over for his little brother Moshe. I'm afraid that Aaron's going to be hurt. He's going to feel slighted. He's going to be insulted. So therefore, send him. Don't send me. I don't want to hurt my brother's feelings. And the Bali Musar say, you see from here, that it's worth to mevatel the whole geula, not to hurt somebody's feelings. Very nice. You know what? The Rebbe Shem got angry at Moshe, and he got punished for it. You know what his punishment was? He says, Aaron achicha ha-Levi. Aaron should have been the Levi, and you should have been the Kohen. But because you said this, you're going to lose the kahuna, and Aaron's going to be the Kohen. It's a punishment. God got angry at him, and he told him, you're going to lose the kahuna because of this. You should have been the Kohen. Aaron should have been the Levi. You're going to be the Levi, and Aaron's going to be the Kohen. Now, what did Moshe do wrong? Adarabba. He said, sounds very nice that he was concerned about his brother's feelings. I want to say that what Moshe did wrong is the following. There are two levels of serving Hashem. One is called Yira, and the other is called Ahava. Now, we normally think Yira is, I'm afraid God's going to zap me with a lightning bolt, so I better do what he wants. And Ahava is, I love God, and I'm doing it out of love. That's right, but it's not really what it is. Let me explain to you what it really is. The Kotzker Rebbe once saw one of his Hasidim saying Kriya Shema with great kavanah. V'yohavtas Hashem Elokecha, he said, with great kavanah. After davening, he went over to him. He said, when you said V'yohavtas Hashem Elokecha, did you mean that you love God or you love yourself? He said, how could I mean I love myself? I said, V'yohavtas Hashem. He said, I'll tell you how. When a person says he loves herring, what does he mean? He carries a little fish in his pocket all the time and every once in a while gives it a kiss and a hug. Is that what he means? I love herring. What does it mean? What does it mean? It means herring tastes good And I love to eat things that taste good. So that's what it means. You love herring. In fact, because of your love for herring, you swallow the herring. Eat them up. So you don't really love the herring. You love yourself. Maybe that's what you mean when you say you love God. I know that doing what the Rabban Shalom wants is the best thing for me in this world, the next world, and I wouldn't want to lose out on all of that. So I love God because I love myself. That's very nice. It's a very high madriga. But it's not the highest madriga. The highest madriga is avas Hashem, where you don't do it out of self-concern. You do it totally altruistically. Totally out of love for the Rabban Shalom. Not because how it's going to affect you. That's the highest level. What's one of the differences between the two levels? What happens if, let me tell you a marshal. They asked the Rebbe Reb Zusha if he had the chance to change places with Avram Avinu. He would be Avram Avinu and Avram Avinu would be the Rebbe Reb Zusha. Would he do it? So Zusha thought for a few minutes and he said, no, I wouldn't do it. He said, what would God gain? There'd still be one Avram Avinu and one Zusha. Why do I have to be Avram Avinu? Let Avram Avinu be Avram Avinu. That's the highest level. Where it doesn't make a difference what me, the Iker is, what's going to be good for the Rabban Shalom in this world. What is the Rabban Shalom's will going to be fulfilled? It doesn't have to be me, Dafka. The Iker is, I want what the Rabban Shalom wants in this world to be done. If Avram Avinu can do it, fine. Why do I have to do it? I can do what I have to do. So I don't have to be Avram Avinu, and Avram Avinu doesn't have to be Zusha. Everybody has to be what they can do for the Rabban Shalom's purpose in this world. Okay. In any case, it says, Hachoshed b'ksheirim lo kebegufa. A person who suspects somebody else wrongly, he himself gets punished. Now, you normally learn that as a punishment, but I think it means something else completely. If I see somebody doing something suspicious, and I think that they stole something, and I suspect them of stealing, and it's not true. So if it is true, then what caused me to suspect them? Them. Because they attacked a stove. So they did something suspicious, and they really did something wrong, and I suspected them of doing the wrong thing. They were the ones who got me to suspect them. So they're the cause. But what if they didn't steal anything? Why did I imagine that they would do it? They're kosher. They're completely innocent. Why did I suspect them? You know why? Because I thought to myself, if I would be doing those suspicious things, I probably would have stolen. So I transfer my feelings to them. Because it's not from them, because they're completely okay, innocent. So I'm transferring what I would have done, what I know about myself, to them. Moshe Rabbeinu suspected that Aaron would feel insulted that he was passed over for the job. That means that he wasn't on the highest level of Avas Hashem. That doesn't make a difference if it's Moshe or me. It's what the Rabban Shalom wants. Who cares if it's Moshe or it's Aaron? But Moshe thought that Aaron wouldn't feel like that. That he's not on that level. That he'd feel slighted. Okay? Now, the Torah tells us that Aaron didn't feel like that. V'ro'acho v'somach b'libo. When he saw Moshe the first time after he was chosen to be the Goel, he was happy in his heart. Not he smiled and in heart he was thinking bad things against Moshe. In his heart he was happy. That means Aaron was on that level of totally being subjugated to Hashem, not for his own purposes, but totally out of love of God. But Moshe Rabbeinu suspected Aaron the other way. So what was that? Moshe said, you know, if I would be the big brother and he'd be the little brother and he got the job and not me, I'd feel bad. So I imagine he would feel bad too. He was Choshe B'Ksherit. That means there's something wrong with him. A Kohen has to be totally subservient to Hashem. No ego. Moshe Rabbeinu showed that he wasn't fit to be a Kohen. Because he had that ego. Because he said, well, if the tables would be turned, I would feel bad, so I imagine that Aaron feels bad. But it wasn't because of Aaron, because Aaron didn't feel bad at all. So therefore, the kahuna was taken away from Moshe. But Moshe Rabbeinu corrected that flaw later on when he said that if the Jewish people are going to be destroyed, then I have no purpose. I'm totally subservient to them. I have no me. There's no ego. And therefore, erase me from the Torah. So when Moshe Rabbeinu said, erase me from the Torah, he corrected the flaw that he had that took away the kahuna. Because of that, it says, Moshe Rabbeinu became a Kohen himself. His children didn't become Kohanim. didn't go on to his children. Aaron got it for all generations. But during the time that they consecrated the Kohanim, and perhaps for the entire time when they were in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu remained a Kohen. So the Rabban Shem did him a favor. And he said the following, I'm going to show you that Moshe Rabbeinu corrected his flaw. And when he suspected that Aaron would feel bad, meaning that if the tables were turned, he would feel bad, that flaw is no longer by him. When was that? The Parsha of Tetzaveh, this week's Sedra, is the induction of the Kohanim. Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to induct his brother Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol. Now one would think that Moshe felt bad. Gee, I could have been the Kohen, and now Aaron's the Kohen instead of me. So the Torah left out Moshe Rabbeinu's name from Parshas Tetzaveh to show that when he inducted Aaron into the Kohuna, it wasn't Moshe inducting Aaron, where Moshe could say, oh boy, I wish it was Moshe and not Aaron, but it was just another you. And it doesn't make a difference if the you is Aaron or the you is Moshe, it's all the same. Moshe's name wasn't mentioned, not as a punishment, but since he reached that level of being willing to be totally altruistic and erase his name from the Torah for the sake of Klal Yisrael, it showed that he corrected the flaw that he had before. The Torah wanted to show that he corrected it. And therefore, in the parsha where you would think that Moshe felt bad, that he had to induct Aaron to be the Kohen, and he wasn't, the Torah tells us Moshe didn't feel like a Moshe, and Aaron like an Aaron, just another Ator. That's all. Right? Moshe just felt himself another you. Therefore, it doesn't make a difference which you is accomplishing what the Rabban Shem wants. If it's this you or that you, it's all the same thing. Moshe didn't feel any ego, and therefore the Torah didn't mention his name. It wasn't a punishment, just the opposite. It was a schar for Moshe Rabbeinu that the world should know that in the parsha you would think that Moshe would feel bad that he lost the kahuna and Aaron got it. He didn't feel bad at all. He had no ego. He was just another atah, another you.